Okay, I'm going to speak. I'm hoping that you're all going to respond and talk to me and not just let me just go on and on and on. It's not so easy to hear. I have to, even the one who came close, it's still hard to hear. So you have to speak up when you want to say something. Okay? I was asked to speak about a couple of things and then open to questions and if you have other random questions. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the New York City water. I'm going to just give it, I'll sort of say it in brief, if I can explain it. Good? Okay, and I see three real questions, two or three parts of the question. Okay, and the first one is, which is when we first started, which is way back when you were at the beginning of the simon, which is whether the water should be lifted because the bugs growing in certain places are not usher. That's like a big surprise to people when they open up the simon, they find out that the simon is all about the bugs that are mutter. You know, the bugs that are usher, those are the obvious ones, you know? If you see a fly in your house, okay, now I'll eat that. Most of the simon is about the bugs that you're allowed to eat. So you find out at the beginning of the simon, there's all these like mysterious halachas about bugs and water that are mutter. You see in the Dr. Chuzia that it was a very real shiloh for people that they had bugs in their water. I mean, we don't usually see, I mean, in Columbus, you never saw bugs in your water. We don't see it here in Chicago. Everybody's water is filtered. We don't see bugs in our water. But it used to be a very real shiloh. So you look at those dinim, all of a sudden you had, you know, dust off those simanim to find out what was going on over there. So we find out that in some places, in Yam and Cholam, bugs are always usher. Yam and Cholam are seas and rivers. They're noivim and they're moishim. Water's always coming to them, and the water's always moving, and it's for sure it's usher. The opposite extreme is boiris or kalim, which are things where there's no noivim, there's no source of water, no continual source of water, and there's no moishim, there's no water flowing out of them, there that it's mutter. And then the middle case is charitzin and itzim, is canals and trenches, where it's a machlokes, what the din is of theirs. The implication is that we should be machmir about it. Okay, it's a shayla with the raisa, and therefore we should be machmir about it. So the big shayla came in New York about, in this angle was, there's this huge reservoir called Kensico. Kensico is this huge reservoir that holds the water, all the water that's collected in the Catskills is brought down to, is brought to this place called Kensico. It's a huge reservoir, which used to be its own little lake, and turned into this huge reservoir. And the question is whether everything comes there from there to the drinking water. What is the status of the bugs in that water? So some people thought that the first portion is it noivim? Is water flowing into it continuously? So some people said, well, there used to be a lake there. There's a tiny bit of water that flows in from springs. But not such a strong svara. And some people said like that. The stronger svara was that where did all that water come from? All that water that's in there, it's coming from the Catskills, it's coming from streams and rivers and lakes. It's all coming from places that really count. You know what I mean? Almost all that water comes in. The simple reading is that's noivim. So it went through an underground tunnel to get there, but give or take, it's all coming from traditional yam and chol. That was a simple thing. It should be considered noivim. The other side is it should be considered moshchen. Should we say that the water flows out of it? So there, Rabowski said, no, it's not moishkim, because it's a reservoir. It means it's closed off. The water doesn't go in place. It doesn't move at all. Okay, so, of course, the arguments against that are that the water doesn't go out of there. The whole New York City drinks the water out of there, you know? You see in the book I wrote, there's as much water goes out of there as the whole Niagara Falls. You know what I mean? There's water pouring out of there on such a regular basis. Of course there's water going out of there. I can say water's not flowing out of there, you know? And even the case that you want to say, it only flows out by people controlling it. So they said, look at that, there's a rabbi who took Mamash exactly about that case, about where the humans control the water coming out, and he said, that's considered a mushroom. And of course, if you look at it, anybody who looked at Kensico thinks that they're looking at Lake Michigan. I mean, they think they're looking at a regular sea. The water's moving around like any other sea. So lots of people thought it was mushroom also. So Rudolf Feinstein held like that. He said, it's a yam. It's noivim, and it's moishim, it's a yam, and any bug that's in there is automatically usher. Rabowski said, no, it's not noivim, and it's not moishim, it's neither of them, okay? Which is, of course, he says, it's just a big bar, okay, which is just hard to wrap your hands around. I mean, people are going boating in there, it's hard to believe that's a bar, you know? But it's a That's what we held. And he said, okay, so he held that it was, and others held in the middle. They said, yes, it's Neuvim. It's not Neuvim. I'm sorry. It is not Neuvim, but it isn't Moshe which way. They held that it's in between there, and it's a case of Chritz and Itzim, which would have to be Machmor. And then there was one little angle to say maybe they could be Mekel here, because we're only dealing with a Safed Rabbanan. We don't have a bug in front of us. We only have a Mi'ev and Motzi bugs. So maybe we could say that's a Safed Rabbanan Lahakal, and be Mekel about Chritz and Itzim. Okay? That was in very short. The first part of the Shaila is whether the bug should be Asur or not. Should we maybe say that the halacha said at the beginning of the siman are enough to tell us that the bugs are mutter? Okay. Can I go to the next thing? You have something to say? Toga, you gotta speak loud. You're gonna have to get even closer. Now, not only are you far away, but I'm older than you are, and I can't hear it as well. So,
even if you're about to say that it's not considered a meishkin, and it's not considered a meishkin, but when you're gonna use it to cook, it's not gonna be considered pirish.
Right, so that's a good question. So why don't we say, well, even if water's in a bar, it's considered, it'll be purish. So on that, he wanted to say was, I don't say what I say. I don't know what he said about that. I don't remember giving a specific answer to that question. But people say what he says is that it's mutter for two reasons. It's mutter because of a svek sveka. First of all, it's a machlokes tazun shach. What does it mean that the water left the bar? Okay, there's a din about, do you take the water out of the bucket? It's like, it seems like a steer at the beginning of those din in there. So which one case is mutter, which case is asur? Machlokes is shach and taz about whether, what the pshat is that. So he said, we could, one tzad on the svek sveka is that maybe it didn't even leave the bar. Because when the water goes completely, it goes from your sink straight into your cup. All the water came out together. The bug never left the water. According to Taz, that wouldn't be considered that it left the bar. And the second topic is, there's a mouth like this later, I don't know if it's by the din you're up yet, I'm not sure up to yet, which is the Sphinx in the Gemara about what does it mean to be pirish? What is that pirish mace? If a bug leaves its habitat when it's dead already, I don't remember which din that's in, if it left that, if that's considered pirish or not pirish, whether that qualifies as pirish. So we're machmir on that then. The Gemara has a whole list of svekas, maybe eight svekas about cases, about whether they're considered pirish. And one of them is pirish mace, and it died. And in our case, that's what happens, because the chlorination of the water before it leaves Kensko kills all the cocoa pods. So Sorgovsky said, so they say in his name that he would have said, so it's a sveka. Suffolk, if it's considered pirish, it just gets into the water, it gets into a new container. And Suffolk, if Pierce Mace is mutter, so we say it's sveksek, and it should be mutter because it's sveksek. Okay? Now, you should know, he said this would totally shock everybody when he said, you're actually better off not filtering your water. People said, we want to filter it, then you're better off, because if you filter your water, then the bug will sit on the top of the filter, and after it sits on top of the filter, then it comes out, then it was for sure purish. So he says, you're better off not filtering your water. Of course, that was like, people couldn't totally flabbergasted by that one. I see we have someone who joined us.
Isn't that svek sveka only shy once if you're putting the water straight into the feed, but if you then take that water and let it, you're going to cook with that water, you're going to pour that water onto flour in the pot holes.
Right. So you're right. So there will be cases that it wouldn't be mutter. You're correct. There are cases that it won't be mutter. So there are cases that... No, so again, I never guessed about this part of it. This part of the what about the water left from the bar? I would show from other people that he would have said that. This I didn't talk to him myself to ask him that question. This svek is what people are saying he held. What would happen in the case of like you said, when you bake with it? Once you bake with it, so you mix it with the flour and water together, so now it's visual purish. You know what I mean? So then we don't have a svek sake. So I don't know what he would have said then. You know, I don't.
Were there any other major pesachim that agreed with Rabelski?
So I don't know that people agreed with him on this first part. Okay, this first part, which is like his main chiddush, was that these bugs are completely mutter, it makes no difference. I don't know others who agreed. I'm not saying there wasn't anybody who did agree with him, but I don't remember anyone agreeing with him. The other things I'm going to tell you, that why it should be mutter, that's more reasonable that people agreed with it. You know what I mean? I can't put my finger on a name on it, but most people who think that you could drink the water in New York City will think for the other reasons, not for this reason. Okay. This reason, first of all, you have to be a little smarter to know this reason. This is a little more involved to know this. But most people never saw the beginning din of the siman. But also, it's much more of a chiddush to say it's not noyim and it's not moshim. I mean, it's like look at it. I mean, what every regular person would think that it's both noyim and moshim. You know, that's the simple way of saying it. Okay, so the other reason, or it's two reasons that are, it's one reason which is really two, and that is, let's say the bugs are also masking. We'll take the bugs. These are considered yamim, and any bug that lives in that water is also. But the first part of the question is, are the bugs visible? Okay, are the bugs visible? So that's an obvious question. Are these bugs visible or not? No one sees them, you know. So are they visible? So somebody went to Prospect Park and went to the lake there and scooped out some living copepods. Okay? Then there was a big machlokes where they were really copepods, it was a different breed, it didn't make a difference. They scooped up what they thought were copepods out of the water there and brought them into a test tube to bring into Rav Shach to look at. And he brought them in test tube and they were alive. Okay, now, again, in the city water you're not going to see them because they're chlorinated, they're all dead. But these were alive. And they look like little flakes of dandruff. That's what they look like. But they didn't look anything like dandruff in the sense that dandruff in a little flask of water just sits there or sinks to the bottom. These were zinging around back and forth all over the place. They were like obviously alive. Something was going on in there. Okay, this was not dandruff. Okay, but they looked like it. That's what they looked at. They were like nothing that said to you this is a bug. You would just blow it away if you looked at it. You wouldn't think of it. But something was going on in there because the thing was zinging around very much alive inside the test tube. So people said, look, you see, it's a living thing. Okay, it obviously it's a living thing. So it doesn't have anything that doesn't have like a tail. It didn't, nothing that you could see, a tail or head or legs or anything like that. But it was obviously alive. It couldn't see anything else. On the other hand, when you pick up a cup of water, they're going to be dead, and they don't do that at all. You wouldn't see that at all. So the truth is that this question, that whether something like that, where when it's alive, you could see what it is. It's very obvious that this thing is alive. But once it died, you can't tell at all. There's nothing about it that makes you be able to tell if it's a bug. Is the in the modern day, that's the most critical question about Hilchos Tefillin. What do you think about that din? Something that, when it's alive, you can see it moving, and you could tell that it's living. But now, when it's not alive, there's nothing, no way to know that this thing is a bug. I don't mean, without magnification. If you just look in the plane, there's nothing that would tell you that this thing is a bug. That's the most crucial question that there is. And depending on how you answer the question, depends on whether a whole pile of things are mutter or a whole pile of things are awesome. Okay? Because it's the reason why you say to a person, people say, well, why don't I just look at my vegetables? You say, yeah, because if you look at your vegetables, you'll never see the bugs in them. Only I can see the bugs in them, you know? But so this question, which is if I look at it, I look at the thing, there's another, look, on my computer that's right in front of me, there's a bunch of specks of what looks like dandruff also. Okay? So if I knew that some of those were awesome, but they don't look like anything, they look like just nothing like a piece of dirt. So this is a very big question. Over the years, the people have been moving more and more lahachmer on that question. That even if you can't see what it is, but when it was alive, you could tell what it is, then it should be awesome. And the other side of it is, one side says, come on, if it was a minute ago, it was also when it was walking around. Now he died, so what happened? That is, so it's the same bug. And other people say, what did the Rebbe expect from me? What did he think? I should know that I'm not supposed to eat this thing? How would I tell if this thing is awesome? Okay, it's a huge question. I don't remember where I spoke about it. You'll get to it in the book. It's a long chapter about it. About this question. So there were people, so that was an argument that's not visible. Okay, and Rebelsky said, he says, guys, let's pause for a second. He says, there are 8 million people living in New York. New York's been using the same water for 100 years. So 8 million people, however many have lived over the 100 years have been here, nobody ever saw these bugs until a few years ago. He says, how can you tell me it's visible? He says, there's a zillion people looking at it. Every guy who drinks a cup of water looks at it and doesn't see anything. He says, how can you tell me that that's nearly nine? Nearly nine that no one ever saw? It's until one guy watched his vegetables with water and he happened to notice it. He says, what was happening for 100 years? So he says, just let's see this thing for a second. How could you call that visible? Okay, so that's the question here. Could that be considered visible when you can't, when you, nobody notices it, and even when you see it dead, it doesn't look anything like a bug at all? Okay, that's a good question. So in order to be machmir, you have to say, yes, it is visible. Okay, and the other half of that question, which we'll call a different thing, which is, Is it matzoi? Are there enough of them around that we should say that it's matzoi? As you know, I think you learn halacha ches. Only things only asr if they're matzoi. If it's not matzoi, it's not asr. So here there's another thing that happened, which is the people who were checking it said, we see this, I'll say, the Erech, there's one bug in every cup of water. And they said, that's one piece of information. And they said, and I'll show you, look how big these bugs are. I can show you these big ones, like they found this in Possible Park. The question is whether were there really that many big ones in every cup of water? Or was there really tiny ones in every cup of water? That wasn't so clear whether, are we maybe mixing things together over here, you know? I think a bug is even if it's really tiny. I show you the really big one so you'll understand what I'm, that you'll believe me, but then I tell you there's one in every cup. So it's a question whether it was really matzoi or not. So that's another, it's a connected to being how big it has to be usher. The smaller that it is to be usher is the more bugs there are going to be per cup, you know? Okay, so that was the other half of the shayla. Okay, so the first part of the question was, maybe we should say is growing in this, in the reservoir is not considered a yam and it should be mutter. That's one kind of question. If you say that, then there's nothing to do with them, a difference. There could be a trillion of them in my cup, doesn't make the difference. The other half is, says is, no, the bug theoretically is usher, but either I can't see it, or the ones that I can see are not matzoi, so they don't have to worry about it. Okay? Any questions before we move on to the next topic? You guys should be happy. You live in Columbus. There's no problem. You can drink as much water as you want to. Nothing to worry about. Only the special people in New York have this special water here. Okay. So then, they said to me, okay, so now that we came up to this idea that there are bugs that are mutter, tell me other bugs that are mutter. I can't wait to find out what are other bugs that are mutter that I could eat, you know what I mean? So I thought of some examples. Nothing's going to be probably too shocking to you, but some examples. Okay, the first one, the most obvious bugs that are mutter, is at the very end of the simon, is bugs that are in fish. Okay, if there's a Gemara that says bevarish, that the bugs in the fish are mutter. Okay, and you probably... even though you didn't get to the end of the simon yet, you probably know about it because there was big tumult about it a couple years ago. And there really, every like 10, 15 years, there's a tumult about it, about those bugs in the fish. And this, the tumult that they talked about was about called Anisakis worm. And the reason why they talked about that one is because there's loads and loads of research about it because it's bad for people who fish. So there's a lot has been studied about them. Okay? They're the common and the most known about because there's a lot of... research has been done about that. So the Gemara says that if you find the worms in the intestines of the fish, then the worm that's usher. And the reason why it's usher is because it came from the outside. It swam into the fish. The fish swallowed it. I mean, there's all kinds of details about where in the intestines would be usher. If you find it in the flesh, so then it couldn't have come from the outside. If it's in the flesh, there's no openings from the flesh to the outside. Excuse me, and therefore it's mutter, because it grew from inside. Okay, and we say it's midegavli. It grew from inside the fish. Now in modern science, so I don't know, 200 years ago, they found that in modern science, nothing grows by itself. Okay, there's no. But they used to believe in spontaneous combustion. Spontaneous. I'm missing the word. Anyhow, things come by themselves. Spontaneous generation. They said, there's no such thing, and everything comes from something. Nothing comes from nothing. So now we have this question. What does the Gemara mean when it said that things are spontaneously generated? It seems to be saying that it's spontaneously generated. So one answer was given by Dessler, you probably know, which is that I told you a minute ago that bugs that are very small are not usher. When they're so tiny, they're not usher. So Rav Dessler said, when things are very tiny to the point that they're not visible, they're not considered a bug. At some point, it grows bigger and bigger, and it crosses the line, and now it becomes visible to the point that now it is usher. Now this is a bug that calls usher. So when it crosses that line, it was as if born, because until now, indin didn't exist. Until now, indin was just a piece of dirt. Now it's considered a bug. So when it by itself did that, it crossed that line without any parents. There were no parents at all. It's not like a cat. A cat is born. When it's born, it's already big enough that you could see it. But this is so to speak, born without any parents around. It goes from being nothing to something, meaning from under-visible to over-visible, without anybody there. So without any parents. So that's considered to be spontaneously generated, and that's when it's considered to have been born. Okay? That's what I'm saying. And that's a fine answer. It doesn't answer every single case. And it might help in this case also, explain this case also. But you'll see when you get to those endinim, what at least for me was my favorite chapter was about, oh my gosh, I forgot the name of the bird is. You'll get to it. It's called, it'll come to me. That the Maril says a different shot. Okay, the Maril says a different shot. The Maril is just really asking a question. He says, what's the line between a bug and a bird, or a bug and an animal? Meaning, we think ants are bugs, and we think cats are animals, and they have different dinim. Which ones are mutter, which ones are usher? Well, what about a mouse? Is a mouse a big ant, or is it a small cat? You say, yeah, a mouse is an animal. Well, then you think even smaller, a cockroach. Is that a big ant, or is that a little mouse? At what point do we cross the line? What about a hummingbird? Hummingbirds are really small. Is that a bird, or is that a bug? Well, it's really small, but in English we call it a bird. But maybe it's a bug. I don't know. What's the line? How do we know what stops being a bug and turns into a bird? Where's the line between them? What's the difference between one and the other? So let me have something to say. Okay. What did you say?
No, like flesh.
No flesh? That's what it depends on? Okay. It could be. We'll take any offers. Okay.
What it's really saying is, why don't we just go with the way that we think as Americans, the typical scientific classifications are very empirical. You can empirically tell the difference. A bird has, you can look at the feathers and the bone structure. It's not completely contrived to call a mouse an animal and a bug a bird.
No. So you could suggest what you want to. Scientists have their way of saying it. But like, for example, there are some things that a scientist says that don't always strike us as, if I could use the word, logical. Like, whales are mammals. You say, you must be kidding. A whale is a fish. Okay? You say, no. It's a mammal. So we say, okay. So to us, because I'm not saying that they're not right. They have a way of classifying things, and these fit in the rules. And the question is, what's the Torah's way of classifying? It might be the same thing. Maybe yes, maybe not. Maybe that is, maybe not. But the Maharal tells us, I'll tell you what the chat is between the difference between a bug and an animal or a bird. Okay, a bug is this, and an animal and bird are like a step above them. He says, the difference is like this. He says, animal is something where the mother is pregnant, and after that many days or months, the baby is born based on how long it's been in there for. The mother's pregnant, let's say it has to be pregnant for 5 months. After 5 months, time's up and the baby's born. Okay? It's determined by the parent, so to speak. Once the parent is pregnant, it goes this many days, and then whatever happens, then the baby's born. He says, a bug doesn't depend on the parent. The parent lays the egg, or has the egg, and when conditions are right, the egg starts to develop and hatches afterwards. The bug is, of course, comes from parents, but the bug, the baby, the infant, plays a role in determining when it's going to be born. I don't mean it makes a conscious decision. It says, Thursday would be a good day. I don't mean that. I mean is that there are things going on that are not connected to the parent that make the determination when this thing should be born. Like, for example, lots of bugs do what we call overwintering. They lay their eggs before the winter. Those eggs lay dormant, and in the spring, they all come out. But when they lay eggs in the spring, they come out much faster. They didn't take them that long for the egg to hatch. It's that the egg is dormant. And when conditions start getting right, the egg says, okay, time to start developing, and then it develops, and then it hatches into whatever it is, into an ant or whatever kind of bug it is. So the baby has a role in when it should be born. So when the Gemara says this, that the bugs are born by themselves, it doesn't mean that they have no parents. Of course they have parents. Of course, maybe in science they didn't believe it then, but we know in science that yes, they have parents. They have a father and a mother. But it means is that the insect plays a role in when it's decided to be born. And therefore, I have no idea which way hummingbirds are. I have no idea. But if you want to know if it's the terrible tea is a bird or as a bug, that's what we're going to look at. Which way does it go? Does it automatically the egg gets laid, and when you lay a chicken egg, 21 days later it hatches, okay? It doesn't make a difference. And if it's too cold outside, guess what? Then the chicken just doesn't hatch, it dies. Doesn't work. Give or take. I don't mean it's exactly. It does a little bit depend on the environment, but give or take, 21 days later it hatches. But in the bug, it's not like that. It lays the egg, and when it's ready, then it hatches as appropriate. Okay? So that's what the Maril says. So what I'm about to say does not say in the Maril. But when the Anisakis worms goes from place to place, and the scientists have tracked how it goes from here to here to here. And like many creatures, they have different forms of life. Like the most famous we know is caterpillars turn into butterflies, okay? Today he's a caterpillar, tomorrow he's a butterfly. They have different, it's like a whole different life, okay? And even other bugs have different stages that are very dramatically noticeable one from the other, even if they're not as dramatic as going from being a caterpillar to a butterfly. So when it goes and it moves into some place and switches from being an A to being a B, it changes from this thing to being that thing, that's considered it's being born again. Because when it decides on its own that all of a sudden it became something else. So just like the it being hatched in the first place, it has a role in that. At a certain point, the conditions are right that this egg starts to form and hatch and become to something else. So too, when it switches from being a A to a B, switches from that's also considered that it is as if born at that point, and that's why it's mutter. Even though yesterday he was, it had a mother, and the mother gave birth to him, and he's been floating around, but now when he moved into the flesh, and he came, scientists will tell us he came from the outside, he moved into the flesh, and he, in the flesh, switched over from being an A to being a B, at that point it's as if to say he was born again, and he was born at that point, and he was never in the water. He was never sure it's in the water. Okay, I forgot to say that. I should have, maybe it was obvious, or I thought it was obvious, that he's mutter if it's born in the flesh because it was never sure it's in the water. So he never was. In this form, he was never sure it's in the water. Okay? So, that's from the technical side, from the theme of Chazal telling us. Why did Chazal tell us that? It came from nothing. It just grew from there. When we scientifically, we think that it did. It had appearance. Okay? But you should know also, there's a different angle to the question, which is the determination that these bugs, the people who wanted to take Tosser said, you know why Tosser? Because we know that the worms that are in the flesh came from the intestines, and the intestines are mutter, and in flesh is Tosser, but we know that these bugs go from the intestines into the flesh. So the question is, how did you know that? How did you know that they went from the intestines to the flesh? Who was there to see that it happened? So there's two things that went wrong with how did they make that determination. One is that was seen under a microscope. Okay, that was seen on a microscopic level that they was transferred from the intestines to the flesh. We usually have a rule that things that happen that are not visible to the naked eye don't count. Okay, so that's one question is it didn't really happen. But it's not, a little more subtle is like this. They went through what they call, they have these tunnels. They see these tunnels that show where the worms go. So there's a little secret. And that is, there are no tunnels they don't see tunnels from the intestines into the flesh. That's not what they saw. They saw tunnels from the peritoneum into the flesh. Okay, what on earth is a peritoneum? Peritoneum is, the intestines are in the middle of the fish, and there's a lining around that between the flesh and the intestines, and that's called the peritoneum. Okay, the lining that sort of like encases the intestines. So they said, the tunnel they saw was between the peritoneum and the flesh. They said, see, it goes from the peritoneum to the flesh. So they said, well, and they decided the peritoneum has the din of intestines. Okay, and they had possible rise from that. And since they decided that the peritoneum is considered intestines, so it's going from a place where it's usher to a place where it's mutter, and therefore they thought it should be usher. That was also questionable. If it goes from one to the other, where it's mutter usher. But that was it. Let's accept it. But that in itself, that was very, it's a very not clear decision. Is the peritoneum flesh or intestines? Well, let's think about it. What did the Gemara say? What's the reason why there's a difference between the flesh and the intestines? The difference is because in the intestines there's a way in. Okay, a fish could swallow something. Okay, there's an opening on both ends of the fish that things can get into the intestines. So things can get in from the two ends. So they get in from both ends, but they can't get into the peritoneum. It's on the outside of the intestines, not on the inside. So the simple understanding is, yes, there was a possible right, not like that. The simple understanding is that the peritoneum is not considered to be the intestines. It's considered flesh. Okay, maybe that was too complicated. Okay. I'm going to go through some other quick cases. These are going to be a lot faster. One case, another case of a bug that would be mutter. Okay, it's not, this is not a common case, but lots of fruits and vegetables grow in greenhouses. It's not automatic, but in many cases, a greenhouse is considered an utter shame and not. Okay, it's not always like that, depending on what the floor of the greenhouse is made of and whether things hang over the edge, whether they carried them in the street, whether the nursery is a greenhouse. There's a lot of factors that would make it not a greenhouse. But there are greenhouses that are utter shame nakel. In particular, coming next year, when it comes Shemitah, when people will specifically plant an utter shame nakel to avoid Isurim of Shemitah. You can read about that in the Sefer on Shemitah if you want to. So if it grows an utter shame nakel, and the bug that's in here is a leaf miner, then that bug is going to be mutter. Okay, I don't know if you read about the leaf miners, but the leaf miners are bugs that are inside, the mother lays an egg inside the flesh of the vegetable. Okay, so the egg is inside, and you would never know it was there, except that when it's born, it moves horizontally. It bores a hole alongside the hole, the leaf or the fruit alongside it as it eats its way through, and when it's big enough, then it pops out and it escapes, and you could see the trail of where it ate away. Okay, so you can see the leaf miner, you can see, I have a picture if I could show you, where it makes its way through. So the leaf miner, we know, was never purish, because if it's still in there, it was never purish, because it was born inside the vegetable and it never left. So if it's grew an Ashen Nakov, and it was never purish, if it was born on the ground, it would be Ashen no matter what. But if it was born Ashen Nakov, and it was not purish, then it would be Mutter Nakov. Okay.
Does that include, thin lettuce?
A little closer.
Does that include thin lettuce?
Yeah.
Lettuce?
Yeah, so it's really amazing how small the bug is, that you could find it in lettuce. I've seen it more in herbs than in lettuce. But that you see eaten away, I should have brought the picture for you, eaten away in between the layers. Like imagine, in my mind, a piece of lettuce is just one layer thick, but it's really, let's say, three layers thick. And it eats the center layer, just moves its way along, leaving just a trail behind it where it was. Okay, you don't usually see the bug, you just see the trail that he was there yesterday. Okay, another bug that would be mutter is bugs that were dried out. So then, one thing later in the simon is that bugs that are dry after 12 months are mutter. We say that even bugs that are mechanically dried are also mutter, which is to say we take, and the herbs in your house, in your pantry, are dried mechanically, usually. They're dried mechanically. Someone takes these herbs, puts them into the oven, and dries them out. And most people assume that has the same thing as being aged for 12 months. So bugs that are in there are mutter. It's not as clear, but it's assumed also that freeze-dried herbs have that same status. And as you'll read about it, if you haven't already, is that in order to determine that, first, Rabbi Gissinger did it, and we repeated it again for Rabelsky. We took bugs and we freeze-dried them, okay, to see what they would be like, whether they should be considered dried out or not. And we took it from a place that was doing freeze-drying. As I'm talking, I'm wondering if... When I did that... Yes. Yeah, I'll tell you that in 1 second. Yes, I'll give you that in a second. But I was just remembering something. I'm not 100% sure about this, but it could be that Ari Bernhack's father was in charge of that company for the OU when I went to this company. It could be. That's what I'm thinking now as I'm saying this. But anyhow, but this company that freeze-dries, I'll tell you what freeze-drying in a second. This company would clean off their herbs before they freeze-dry them. And they had this, like, drum with holes in it. And it would turn around and around. They were trying to get dirt off of it, and things like that. But underneath it, there was $1,000, $10,000, because bugs were falling off this thing. So the underneath all the dirt and stuff was collecting, but there were thousands, I mean like handfuls of bugs in this box, and we scooped some out of them. We freeze-dried them for Charles Dorbelsky, who then agreed that yes, those were dried out enough. So a freeze-dryer, I'll explain you what a freeze-drying is. Most of the herbs that you see in your house are almost never freeze-dried. Freeze-dried is a much more sophisticated than the regular dry herbs you have in your house. Freeze-dried is you take something, let's say a strawberry. If you've ever seen strawberries inside cereal, okay, those are freeze-dried. Or for strawberries in yogurt, those are freeze-dried. What you do is you take the, let's say the strawberries, and you freeze them 100% solid. So it takes, they sit for many, many hours, so they're frozen solid. You put them into a device which there's a vacuum in there. Okay, and the way it works is that when you make a vacuum, the stronger the vacuum is, the lower the boiling point of water is in that setting. So if you were to make something to a pure vacuum, water would boil at 32 degrees. It would go straight from being ice under 32 degrees to vapor at 32 degrees. What they do is they put the frozen items into this device where there's a vacuum, and the heat is controlled. It's heated very little, not 32, it's heated very little, and the water that's in the item goes from being frozen to being a vapor without ever being water. If you put an ice cube on your counter, it's an ice cube and then it turns into water, and then you could boil it and it could turn into vapor. This never has a water phase. It goes straight from being frozen to being vapor without ever passing water in between. It's a very long process. It takes like 20 hours to do this. It's very controlled and very delicate. And the idea is, since there's never a water state phase, the item holds on to a lot of its shape and flavor that would have been lost had you just boiled the water out like you usually do. So the herbs in my house that are just dried out in an oven, a lot of them boiled out besides the water. The freeze-dried herbs hold a lot more of their original flavor in them. And the strawberries or whatever it is, and they're somehow more real when you do it like that. So the freeze-dried herbs are not drying the herbs the way the earlier person spoke about. It's not the heat. There's a very little heat in there. But they do get dried out. Also, that's the point. Get them dry, get the water out without heating them. So that was the question. Is that the same thing? Is that considered to be dried out, like as it's 12 months old, that is dried? So we freeze-dried the bugs, and then you touch them, and they were like paper. They were brittle, and there was nothing there. They look like a bug. You know, they, just like a freeze-dried strawberry looks like a strawberry, but these were so brittle, there was nothing left. In fact, you can't freeze-dry bugs. I mean, what I mean is, we said to the people, hey, maybe we should freeze-dry lettuce, and then you can have bug-free lettuce. They said, no, it won't work. It becomes like brittle and just falls apart. You have to freeze-dry things that are a little more substantial, like shrimp and meat and ice cream and the strawberries. I mentioned shrimp because you should just know why freeze-dry things in Hashkacha. Because freeze-drying machines are also used for things like shrimp and meat. So those things, herbs, are that we have, not fresh herbs, dried herbs. Again, in your pantry you have dried herbs, or if you, some companies will use freeze-dried herbs. Some people even buy them, because they're much more expensive. You would know if you were buying freeze-dried herbs. Those herbs are okay. The only little side question that there is in this thing is that some people don't mechanically dry them. They just lay them out in a hot climate, like if you live in Egypt, it's hot and sunny and it doesn't rain ever. So they take the herbs and they lay them on the floor and they come back 3 days later and they're dry and they're done and they sell them to you. So it's not so clear why those are mutter. What are the bugs that are on there? The bugs are not dry after 12 months. They're not mechanically dried. So that's a really good question. If and why those should be mutter. Okay, I have one more. Okay, I'm sorry. Here comes the question. Good.
What are the specifications if you want to dry these? How long does something have to be cooked for it to be considered on a dry heat, to be considered dry?
It's a good question. I don't know. We just assume that when you dry it out, I mean, they dry it till it's really dry. I don't have to tell you, you know what I mean? And we assume that that's dried out enough. It is interesting that there's a din in Hilchos Yayin that dried out wine, there's two levels of how dry it is, and that's a question, if not for today, you have to read about alcoholic beverages, the cream of tartar, how well it's dried. For bug leeches, so I don't know. Try. It's a good question. I'm not sure exactly what there's a number, you know. Okay. So my last thing to tell you about bugs that are mutter, or sort of that are mutter, is that you've probably heard that there are bugs that people eat. There's a coloring made from bugs called carmine. It's a carnivore bug, and they crush it up. That's not the bug that's mutter. Carmine is also. It makes reds and orange and purple colors. That's what it's used for. It's a really good color. But there's something else that's made from bugs that American hashkafas consider to be mutter, and that is shellac. So shellac is not the bug itself. Shellac is something that the bug gives off a liquid that comes out of the bug, and they scrape it off the tree, and then they, whatever they have to do to it, and eventually it could either be used like to polish furniture, or it could be used to polish candies. Like, you know, like, I don't know, like little, like Mike and Ike's, you know, have shellac on them, okay? So, so there are, in America, we consider it to be mutter, Moshe wrote Shula that it's mutter, in Eretz Yisrael they don't, and some Hasidic hashkachas in America also won't accept it, but we consider it to be mutter. So, the reason for that, I just explained to you, is that carmine is usher, but shellac is mutter. What's the difference? The difference is that carmine is the actual bug, and shellac is something that comes out of the bug. Things that come out of a bug, that can simon pe aleph, a yotze from a bug is also asur. Yotze from something trafe is also asur. But the difference is like this. When something comes out of a trafe animal, like milk from a camel, it's trafe. But it can either be called yotze min atami, which is asur, or it's pirsha, something that's excrement, something that's not edible, that leaves the animal. And Rosh says it like this. He says, for what the determination whether something is yotze or pirsha, is it edible and usher, or not edible and mutter? That happens at the moment it leaves the animal. So when milk leaves a camel, it's edible. That's usher. When shellac leaves a bug, it's not edible. It's furniture polish. Okay, it's not edible at all. The fact that we later can do something to make it into a food, that doesn't make a difference. If at that point it's not edible, it's considered pirsha. It's not considered edible, and therefore it's not usher. As opposed to milk from a camel, when it leaves the camel, it is usher, so then that's it is edible, and that has it in a pure tape, that's why it's usher.
So why can't we say the same thing by gelatin?
By what?
By gelatin.
So that the point is that gelatin is not a yoytze from the animal. Gelatin is the animal itself. So there, Rabban Kotler said, he said, hagam that there are stages when it's not edible. In the end, when we make it something edible, in the end, when it becomes edible, it goes back to the issue that it had. It originally was a piece of an animal. It temporarily was not edible. Doesn't make a difference. It was temporarily not edible, but now it is edible, so it goes back to being usher. As opposed to the shellac, that determination doesn't make a difference if it's edible today. It's when it left the animal. I mean, when it was excreted, was it edible at that point? If it wasn't edible, then it's mutter. Then you can't make it guarantee later. It already left. It's not leaving at that point. We got someone in the corner here. No?
I have a question. It's a carbon thing. I understand why it's bug, but it's crushed up, no? So why should it, why is it a bundle if there's tau?
Okay, so the question is, if we have a crushed up bug, actually someone asked the question, what happens if you have a dead bug? So dead bugs are usher, and crushed up bugs are also usher. So the question is, crushed up bugs, dead bugs and crushed up bugs are all usher. But the amount of carmine that's in my food is a tiny amount. It's not nice and tam. No, for sure it's not nice and tam. It's a tiny amount. It's for sure bought the position. And you can't pull it out anymore, so it should be mutter. And the reason why that's not is that it depends on a different shayla. And that is there are certain things that can't be bottled even though there's a very small amount. Okay? And so machlik is whether what happens if you have something that gives color. Okay, it's not a maimid or a davachoshev or a barrier. Those are all reasons why something would not be bakla. What happens if it's none of those things, but it gives color, which is exactly what carmine does. It makes red, oranges, and purples to the thing. It gives a very strong color to the food. So it's noticeable because it gives a color, but it's not a maimid. It doesn't change the character of the food. It doesn't give taste to the food. So that's a shaila. The pichadar, most people follow what the pichadar says. He says is, because it's a machlokes, when you have a shayla with the raisa, you should be machmer. When you have a shayla with the rabbanon, you should be mekel. Since bugs would be also with the raisa, so therefore we're machmer. And say it's a suffix with the raisa, we should be machmer. And if it gives color, we would say the food is usher. Lafuke other things. There are other things that give kala from grapes, where the shayla is just a shayla of, like, Eno, it comes from grapes. It's a shayla only if it's Rabbanon. So there we would say chazusa is ladmal, so we would say it doesn't hazard. But here, since it's a potential deraisa, we would say that it is also. Okay, I don't know if you want me to keep, I have two other things I was going to talk about, but I could talk about them, or you could ask questions, whichever would you rather. I'm not partial to that. It was not. Tell me what you want me to talk about. I'll try to do it. I'll do it live. What's that?
Why does it get better? Why does it get
better? Come a little closer. I can hear you better.
Why does it get better once it's frozen? But, you know, those fine things with the, that have hashkafa, maybe are given an hashkafa easier because they're frozen.
Okay, so I'm not sure. You sound like you're talking about a specific thing. A specific thing you say, oh, I know. What? Strawberries. Okay, so like this. So there's two parts to why something might be better off when it's frozen. One has to do with the matzias. So for example, in strawberries, I went to watch people who prepare frozen strawberries and they prepare fresh strawberries. Okay, when they prepare fresh strawberries, like when you go to the supermarket and you see strawberries in a little plastic container. Okay, so I'm going to explain to you how much processing went into that strawberry. There are some people standing in a farm, and they take the strawberry off the tree and put it into the box. That's the whole processing. That's it. It goes from the farm into the box, and then another one into the box. Okay, and then the box goes into a truck and comes to your supermarket. Okay, they specifically don't wash it. Not only because they don't want to waste their time, but because if they would wash it, the moisture would turn into mold, and the strawberries would become rotten. So they pull the strawberry, I watched it, pull it off, stick it into your container, pull it off, stick it into your container, okay? And then hopefully he didn't sneeze on them, and he puts them in the truck, and off it goes to your supermarket. So nothing was done to them. And if you like strawberries, so do the bugs. So there's lots of bugs on there, you can imagine. There's bugs, the strawberries go right on the ground, there's a zillion bugs all over the place. So, and nothing happened to them. So they come to your house, so of course, you have to do something to make sure there's no bugs on them. Because, I mean, the bugs literally, it went right into the box. That's what happens. As opposed to the frozen strawberries, it's bon faquer. The frozen strawberries went through a tremendous amount of washing. They come in and they go through huge amounts of washing. And again, they don't have to worry about them molding because they're about to be frozen. And they go through a much more serious washing. They're also more firm. They're finished. They're ripe. Fresh strawberries are picked, not ripe. These are picked ripe. And they do a very serious washing to it. When I watched them do the washing, I said, that's exactly what somebody would do if they were giving hashgacha to it. They would do all these kind of washings. Then we took, we took frozen ones out and checked them, and we didn't see bugs. Now, since then, the CRC has changed its policies about it and does not allow frozen strawberries. But when you talk about what happened, the processing that happened to the frozen product was much more significant than what was going to happen to the fresh. Okay, so that was one reason why it should be better if it's frozen than if it's fresh. So I'll ask whatever our guy over here who has a question, and I'll get to the second part in a second. Say again, why does it say that?
Frozen blueberries in the CRC said that you keep it out with just plain and then the fresh one can
be washed. So again, because the frozen get much more processing, so it's easier to assume that there's nothing happening in the frozen. I'm sorry, that there are no bugs in the frozen as opposed to the fresh. Nothing's happening, there's no processing happening to them. They're just being put into the container.
But what's the difference between that and strawberries?
So that's detail. What I mean is, that's a detail. That's Rabbi Langer, someone in her office, who lives in fruits and vegetables and bugs, and he looks at this and he says, yes, there's a bug, and no, there's a bug, whether he calls whether there is or there isn't. I'm just saying to you, in the theoretical side, is that the processing is very different from them. So the question was, why would frozen be better? So that's one reason why frozen would be better. But there's a second reason. Okay? And the second reason is a little more subtle, and that is like this. When we have a bug, when we have a fruit or vegetable that we don't see any bugs on it, so what's the name? So if it's uncommon that bugs will come there, let's say on carrots, okay? It's not much to be bugs in carrots. You don't have to look for bugs in carrots. Even though they might be there, you don't have to worry about them. Because it's so unlikely, you don't have to worry about them. Then we have foods which are, it's matzah, it's common that it happens. So midrabanan, you will have to check to see if there are bugs in there or they're not bugs in there. Midraisa, you only have to check if it's an even higher amount, okay, which we're always going to talk about. Let's say if most of them have it, have bugs in midraisa, you will have to check. Midraisa, if less than half of them have bugs, you don't have to check them at all. Midrabanan, you have to check it. Okay, so most of the fruits and vegetables we have in the modern day are just matzuri. They're not mukhsi. They don't, most, not usually it has bugs in them. It's common that it has bugs in them. And it's a chiyuv to rabbanan to check them. So, if we're dealing with a fruit or vegetable that has only a chiyuv to rabbanan to check it, so a chiyuv to rabbanan means is you should do whatever you can before you eat this vegetable. You should do everything you can to make sure there's no bugs in it before you eat it. But, in a fresh vegetable, that's much more easy to do something than with a frozen. So there are times that we say, in the frozen version, it's much so that there should be bugs in there. But realistically, there's no way to find those bugs. In order to find the bug, I have to do something that would make it impossible to eat this food. I have to shred it to find the bugs that are in there. Meaning when it's alive, it's easy to work with it. The bugs themselves are alive. When it's fresh, the bugs are alive. It's easy to work with it, and I can find something. In the frozen, and not always, but at times, the frozen means it's not possible to find the bug without destroying the food. If that's true, then chacham aren't machayim. They say, do as much as you can. As much as I can means nothing. I'm not going to do about it. So sometimes there may still be bugs in here, but since it's not such a strong amount of infestation, we say is there's nothing. Realistically, there's no way to get the bugs out of them. Okay, so that's a good question. If I got the question right, is what happens when they sell them with hashgacha on them? Are they doing a better job? Are they doing something more, or are they just telling you that it's okay? So, as a rule, it's only a rule. It's not 100%, but as a rule, when someone gives hashgacha and says, I give hashgacha that this thing doesn't have bugs on it, or I give hashgacha sign that it's kosher, that means is they're actually going through the effort to make sure that there are no bugs in it. They're not just saying, oh, there's something that's good enough. There's someone who's there who's checking. That was one of the things I was going to talk about. They do they're doing something to make sure that there are less bugs. Like, for example, this is not exactly the case that you want, but it's a sort of example. When I used to work for the OU, there was a time that they gave hashgacha to a broccoli company. It was not a Hamish company. It was a regular, supermarket brand of broccoli. And the way they gave hashgacha to this company was that this company got broccoli from different places. One of the places that they got it from was from a climate that was very cold and very high up in the mountains. And for whatever reason, there were few bugs in that place. Okay, it wasn't a good place where bugs wanted to live. And what would happen is, when they got the broccoli from those places, a mashgiach would then check it to make sure that it came as clean as they usually did. And assuming that it came out clean, then they would sell it as kosher. When it didn't, this company is a very big company, and they would put it up to one of their other brands. They had many brands. So this brand was always the kosher brand, but they were able to do it because they were getting it from a special place, a place that was very cold and had no bugs in it. And other people do it, they grow it in a greenhouse, or they wash it special. And if they're doing something to say, I'm making sure that there's no bugs in this thing. That's what they're doing. It's not, most people are not just saying this, even if there are bugs, you're not going to get them out in this case and this and that. That's not usual what it means. But I only say usual because there are always exceptions, and just because he knows how to write his name in Hebrew, or he has a pretty logo, doesn't mean that he did that. You know what I mean? You have to know the truth. But the problem who's doing it correctly, it's assumed. If I say I'm giving hashgacha, or I'm saying there's no bugs in here, so I'm making a real effort to do that. I'm doing something special to make sure that there's no bugs in it. So what goes on is some of it has to do with changes in policy, have to do with changes literally in policy, like I talked to you beforehand about how big a bug has to be usher. So sometimes hashgachas change their rules. They take a different position about how big something has, for example, has to be. And sometimes it has to do with just knowing more or the facts on the ground changed. You may know, but there are truths in Ramosha about cabbage having no bugs in it. Ramosha says that, when he came to America, he found out there's no bugs in cabbage. Okay, and whatever he has to say therefore about it. And that tshuva, if you look at the date on the tshuva, that tshuva was written about a month after America outlawed DDT. Which is to say, was Ramosha's whole experience in America until then was bugs, there were no bugs in any place. Because, and a whole generation of people grew up like that, because there was this great pesticide called DDT, and they sprayed it every place and there were no bugs. Nothing, everything was perfectly fine. Okay, but right after that tshuva was written, it became illegal, they considered it to be unsafe, and then started to be more bugs. So something like the Metzias changed, also things changed out in the field of what people are doing. Or like the CSA at one point realized, you know, when the farms that do pick your own, it's like you let you know, consumers just come out and pick it, they do put on less pesticides into there. Because it's not going to the market anyhow. People just pick them by themselves. They do less. So they realize, hey, we have to be more careful about those. There are more bugs on those than there are what you buy in the supermarket. You know, so people, so they just get, either things change or they get smarter, you know, and they realize more. You know. So the answer is, on a theoretical level, that yes, that's good enough. It's enough to make it just not matzui anymore. That's good. You don't have to make it to zero bucks. And there's a riot to that from the dinim about, I think it's coming, like maybe a halacha test, about the bugs in beans. And they would soak them, and then they would boil them and try to get the big ones to float up in this net test that were not 100%. There's no way that every bug is going to come out that way. But it gave a basically made sure that there were no bugs, and it would leave. It was mostly beforehand, but it wasn't mostly afterwards. And it's mostly at that point. I only say the word theoretical because it takes a certain understanding, which is when you say, I washed it, and there's probably not much anymore, probably needs a little bit more experience to go along with that. You know, that you really know that, hey, after doing that kind of a wash, it's going to be weird to have a bug at this point. But if you could do that, if you know that at this point, you know, after that kind of a washing, there's not going to be bugs left, then there's not going to be so many, it won't be bugs anymore, then that's okay.
But the case of the beans is only when you die over three.
No, in the beans, you're doing two things. If I remember correctly, the hot water was to get I forgot hot or cold. One of them is to get rid of the bugs that were there when they were on the pre, and the other one is to get rid of the bugs that from later.
That
Okay, so I'll go look back at it again. I don't remember. I remember from that case as a riot. I know that it's accepted like that. I'm telling you as a riot. I thought there was riots from the case. Look at it again. But that case, my impression was from that case was that was a case where it was a good idea. It was something that was going to work. You know, is it going to be perfect? It's not perfect. When you say, I'm going to look at it and I'm going to see no bugs, okay, that'll work. But it wasn't a perfect thing. It was, hopefully it'll get everything out, you know. Okay, so I have to tell you something. The way that people check, that was one thing that I was supposed to talk about, was checking just sampling, is not, Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that. You're supposed to do that, to sample things. Shulchan Aruch says you should not sample things. It doesn't work. So to say is, let's say the person says, I wash the vegetables, and then I put it through a thrift cloth, and then I see no bugs, and then it's clean. Okay? I mean, it doesn't say that in Shulchan Aruch you could do that. The truth is, Shulchan Aruch has this thing about, I just said about the beans and floating the beans. You know, there are ways to test it without looking, but it's a hashara that does the trick or not. So the idea is, it's a hashara that if I did X, Y, and Z and there's no bugs, then probably there aren't many left. Any or many left. But it's only a harsh hour. So, you know, if there's some left after that, then maybe I didn't do such a good job. Or maybe there are more hiding someplace else, you know? So it's just a judgment of whether that's good enough or whether that's going to do the trick. It's not because the din says, if I have one, then it's awesome. It's, if I have one, well, maybe there are three more behind it, you know? So that whole idea that we can find some bugs in the water or on a thick cloth, and therefore it's mutter, it's all just a judgment, you know? So. Okay, anything else? The cicadas.
It is right. Does that pose any issue with food consumption? Is there any eggs or anything like that?
Okay, have you ever seen cicadas?
No.
Okay, I did. So 17 years ago, my in-laws live in Baltimore. And 17 years ago, we were there when the cicadas came out. Okay? You don't have to worry about anybody. I mean, you're not allowed to eat them. But they wouldn't fall into your food. They're like big, like grasshoppers. This is not like little tiny bugs. You know what I mean? They're really big. Do they lay eggs? They definitely lay eggs. That's what they laid eggs 17 years ago. What's your question? No. It's not like, you know. You're not going to miss them. I mean, you can't hear yourself think either for a few weeks, a few days. But it's not like they're going to get into your food. They're like the big things, like, you know, the big bugs. You step on them in the street because they leave a skin behind. They like shed their whole skin and leave it behind. So it's really big. This is not like thrips that are going to get into your food. This is like, no. You have to be really bad off if you eat one of those. Wait a second. If you have little kids, they might eat them because they can play with them. Because they're like, it's like a little toy. Like when you find them on the street, they're like this big. You know what I'm saying? You know, kids will find they play with them. So then you should tell your kids not to eat them. But you yourself are not likely to eat them. Okay, but save it, guys. It's been great. No problem. If you have any questions, you know how to find me.